Hello and welcome to the More Than Books podcast with our first episode of 2019. As usual, I'm your host Joel, joined by Colin.
Hello.
And today we're going to do our annual, not issue, but, you know, annual podcast.
Episode.
Yeah, that's the word I'm looking for. Of tech trends for the upcoming year using the Consumer Electronics Showcase, CES 2019, which ran from January 8th through January 11th this year. So it just got over about a week ago.
Mm-hmm.
It'll probably be a couple weeks by the time this episode is posted, but, you know, that's how we do it. So you're gonna hear a lot of kind of the same things we've talked about before, just new versions, new variations, and new technology thrown into things. You can really see, if you go back and listen to the previous podcast that we do every year on CES, you can really see how some of these technologies are developing quite rapidly in just a couple of years, 2 to 3 years. They may have been introduced a couple of years ago, and now they're fully functioning, purchasable consumer electronics that everybody knows about.
Or they will be in the near future.
Yeah. So things like virtual reality headsets, smart everything, that's been a trend for the last few years. Things like the Google and Amazon Alexa smart devices.
Right.
New products a couple years ago, now they're pretty much ubiquitous, and they have tons of new gadgets that they're putting all those smart virtual assistants into. So to start things off, everybody's favorite consumer electronic, the television. Most people have at least one or two in their home. Do you have one, Colin?
I have one.
You have one.
It does not get used.
I have two, but we only use one, and even then, it's basically a Netflix machine at this point.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the big daddy of them all, massive, the Samsung Wall was something that was spotlighted at CES. I think last year they had a smaller version of it. This year they had a 219-inch Samsung Wall. Like, it is a wall.
Right.
And they use...
I don't think I have any walls big enough in my house that could actually hold that TV.
I don't think I do either. They have a smaller consumer version that's going to be on sale, or it's available for pre-order. I think it's 146 inches.
Which is still crazy.
That's small. That's the small one. Yeah. But the big one that they had on display was 219 inches. It's a micro LED modular TV. And I guess the way it works is it's basically all screen, no borders, and they can just string the screens together in a way that you can't see where the panels attach.
Right.
And they all connect to one motherboard, basically.
Mm-hmm.
I think you can just plug them all in. So you can make this TV even bigger if you wanted to.
Or make it a crazy shape.
Yeah, you could make it crazy. It's like you have a series of squares. You can make it any shape you want that's...
Anything that's got right angles, at least.
So I think the point that they're mainly looking at probably absurdly rich people and companies. I imagine this thing being in like a lobby of a company built into the architecture. You know, there might be like brickwork around the TV in an interesting shape.
Sure.
Yeah.
Which would be cool to look at.
Yeah, it'd be cool to look at. I can't imagine replacing it or getting it serviced if anything goes wrong with it.
Yeah,
so save your money up if you know you can
if you want a
219-inch wall TV. The other notable TV that would seem to get a lot of press was from LG, and it's called the LG OLED TV-R. That is a lot of acronyms.
Yes, that is.
But the R stands for rollable screen. It's in a little box, and
a big box.
A big box. And you can, you know, hit a button on your remote to make the TV roll up from the box and become a huge flat screen TV.
Right.
And you can hit a button to make it roll down, and it just, I'm pretty sure it's made of a flexible material that just you can roll it up. I don't know a better way to say
it's if you like imagine a roll of toilet paper. the screen is the paper, and then the device that's inside of the box is like the cardboard tube, and it just rolls it around this tube, essentially, to store it out of sight. So then when it's not activated, it just looks like a little, like, sideboard or a buffet or something, kind of.
Maybe like an end table, like a big, or like a coffee table or a...
Right.
I think it has a sound bar in it, is what's in the
Yeah,
in
I think the entire front of it is like a speaker of some kind.
So, I mean, maybe you could technically still use the speaker when the TV is rolled up.
I think you can, because I think there's a mode that you can put the TV in where just the very top sliver of the TV comes up, and then it's like kind of like a music menu with like volume and play and pause functionality and stuff, all that sort of thing.
We're re-entering the era when TVs were actually pieces of furniture at this point.
Because
this thing is in on a stand that I'm pretty sure you need it to be on the stand. There's no wall mounting this thing.
No.
I don't think so.
No.
Yeah. It's a 65-inch TV, so it's very big.
but you're right.
You can hide it.
Yeah, it's for people who want their technology to look like cool, modern furniture.
Yeah, if you want to, like... If you don't like having a screen, you know, that's always there, whether it's on or off, you can hide it. And you can make your place look classier instead of having a giant screen all the time.
But, yeah, I mean, we talked about potential maintenance costs if something goes wrong on a TV.
I mean, this
just
thing...
a few minutes earlier. I can't imagine a TV with this many moving parts.
Yeah.
When something goes wrong with it.
Yeah, I wonder how long one of those rolling screens lasts too. The backlighting,
the screen itself.
So that's it's cool. Take a look, watch a video of it rolling down into the into its box, into its home.
Yeah,
I mean it's interesting technology that seems like something that would have been in a movie made in the 80s or 90s about the future.
And that's kind of my problem with it, is because then I feel like in 20 to 30 years from now, people are going to look back at this TV and think it was the dumbest thing ever. I just feel like it's not going to age very well, but I guess we'll see.
So the other big TV announcement, not announcement, I mean, there's one of these from every single brand.
Yes.
So it's not just a Samsung or an LG thing. It's 8K TVs.
Right.
So... A typical HD TV is 1080.
Horizontal pixels.
Horizontal pixels. Okay. So, that, you know, that was the technology, what, 10 years ago, 8 years ago, 1080p became kind of standard. Well, a couple years ago, 3 or 4 years ago, they started doing 4K TVs, but...
Or sorry, I guess it would be 1920 horizontal and 1080 vertical.
Yeah, 1920 by 1080. Well, right. 4K is 4,000... By, I don't know.
You can round it to about 4,000 by 2,000.
Yeah.
3840 by 2160.
Okay. So that's 4K. It's basically twice as HD, at least twice as HD, if not more than twice as HD as a standard 1080p TV.
Right.
So 8K TVs are twice as HD as a 4K TV.
So that would be 7680 by 4320.
There's no content that's actually been filmed. There's no TV, there's no no movies that you can watch in 8K, I think, at this point.
Right. To the best of my knowledge.
The content doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
You could probably upscale 4K to 8K, but it would probably... Would it look the same as a 4K, or would it look worse? Like, is it better to...
the other problem, too, is... And this is a problem with 4K as well, is that you can only recognize the higher quality if you're sitting closer to the screen. If you're back far enough away from the screen, it will look exactly like a regular 1080p television.
Well, I think that's why we need these 219-inch Samsung wall TVs, so that no matter where you are
where
in
you
the
are,
room, you can notice the difference.
You can just see how oppressive all the detail is. It's a little ridiculous.
So, 8K TVs are coming, and... Maybe content will catch up at some point.
Maybe, but I don't know. How long did it take for like 4K Blu-rays to come out after 4K TVs came out? Do you know? I don't.
There's still, like, you can get them, I know, and there's but they don't release everything on 4K.
It's, right, exactly.
And at this point, physical media, which is probably the best way to take advantage of something like an 8K TV, people aren't buying...
Right.
Blu-rays even anymore. Like, everything is streaming, and...
And I can't imagine any company wanting to or being able to successfully stream 8K. I mean, the amount of bandwidth.
Yeah, if you get Netflix streaming 8K content, you're going to eat up your data cap very quickly if you have a internet service provider that tracks that stuff.
Never mind the fact that when you stream content, it's being compressed a little bit anyways, which is why if you watch something on Netflix, it's usually going to look worse than if you have that same thing on DVD or Blu-ray and watch it on that.
So, yeah, that's true. So imagine 8K. Oh, man. Trying to watch that even on a mobile device would kill your data.
Yeah. It's so wildly impractical. I think all of these TVs have been so far. Color me still skeptical about TVs, I guess.
Yeah. This technology hasn't proven itself yet.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah. So one kind of useful TV thing that was announced at CES this year also is that Apple is going to start integrating their AirPlay system into new TVs. This is actually pretty useful. So if you don't know what AirPlay is, it lets you, I always say cast because that's Google terminology. You can cast your screen to your mobile device. You can cast your mobile device to your TV, or you can stream something that's stored on your phone or your computer on your TV.
Right.
So Google has Chromecast technology, which has been built into TVs for a couple of years now, and Samsung has its own thing as well.
Yeah, that's what it's
called. Yeah. And I'm pretty sure previously Apple had AirPlay integrated into Apple TVs, so the Apple TV box, but you would have to have one of those boxes.
Right.
And now they're going to let you start doing that without needing to buy one of those boxes, which is very anti-Apple.
It is.
They like to sell their devices.
Yeah.
But I think they like to sell content on iTunes more.
It's getting to be
Those are the TV announcements of CES, or at least the most noteworthy ones. Mm-hmm. Any other interesting trends that you noticed at CES?
Yeah, so there were a lot of robots. I don't really know a whole lot about robots. We're going to do our best to talk about them anyways. A lot of them were kind of silly or impractical, or I think we're just kind of there to sort of like show off a little bit. The one that kind of captured my imagination the most was this massive like War of the Worlds looking robot that was just like standing over a little table tennis setup.
Oh yeah, I did see that.
Yeah,
and you could play ping pong with the robot.
You would
right?
play ping pong with the robot, and it would apparently learn your moves, analyze your weaknesses, and just beat you. So that's really cool. I like that. I mean, it's kind of spooky that, you know, we've got, I mean, obviously robots, computers have been able to beat humans at chess and other kind of complicated turn-based games for quite some time, but to have one be able to beat someone in like a, consistently beat people in like a real-time game is pretty fascinating.
It's called the Omron Forpheus, and it's the fifth generation of this thing.
Good luck Googling that.
It looks like if you've ever seen RoboCop, it kind of reminds me of the giant robot that goes berserk.
It's extremely menacing looking.
Yeah, it like hovers over this table and has a little robotic arm that holds the paddle. And
very imposing.
I want to watch videos of this thing in action because it looks pretty impressive.
Yeah. So that was kind of the initial one that struck me, because why wouldn't it? It's so cool looking and so out there. Mm-hmm. But there were some other robots that pretended to be practical, and some that might actually be practical.
So, yeah, it announced. Looks like they have a lot of humanoid-style robots that they had there, but they also have things like the Foldymate laundry folding machine. I mean, does that qualify as a robot? It looks like a printer.
Right. they had some kind of bread robot that makes bread.
I mean, is it a robot or just a machine? Like,
yeah.
At what point do you call it just a device or a smart device?
Like, I think that's down to the
makes
marketers.
It a robot? I found an article in The Verge just about the robots at CES, and it does have a kind of an interesting definition of what a robot is.
Okay.
It says, famed roboticist Rodney Brooks defines a robot as something that can affect its surroundings, not just its interior. So it's something with moving pieces that can manipulate something else in the world. So I guess with that definition, the laundry folding robot may qualify.
Oh, sure. If it's, I would say it does.
Yeah. But you do have to, like, load, it looks like you have to load the laundry into it in a certain way, and then it'll do it. I know, it looks like a printer. It's really weird.
Yeah, that is bizarre. Some of the other ones that I saw, there was one that could carry your groceries or your shopping for you.
Okay.
Which seems a little silly, but you realize then that that could help people that can't lift everything themselves. So that's kind of cool. There was a air purifier one where it would have like little docks throughout your house. And if any one of those docks detected that something was wrong with the air quality in the immediate area around that dock, this little robot would scurry over to that dock and then start purifying the air in that room. Which,
okay,
again,
interesting,
kind of cool. A little, it seems a little over-engineered maybe to me, but there were a couple that stuck out to me as actually being kind of noteworthy. One of the big ones was...
Bot care.
Yeah. So this was a robot they designed basically for the purposes of helping out the elderly, keeping tabs on them while they're asleep to make sure they're sleeping okay, calling 911 or relatives if they've noticed that the person has fallen down and can't get back up, just giving them little daily updates, that sort of thing. Kind of cool, and kind of always where I have imagined robots being useful, just caring for people that can't necessarily look after themselves very well anymore.
It's interesting. A lot of those kind of personal care robots, of course, they're coming out of Japan or Korea or countries where there's a large population that is aging and not enough younger people to care for the aging population.
Yeah.
So it's definitely a problem that they're solving with technology.
Right.
This one robot that I'm looking at now is called Temi, the personal robot.
Is that the one that kind of like... It flaps its arms and stuff.
This one doesn't even look like it has arms. Oh, it kind of looks like a Roomba with a pole attached to it, with an iPad attached to the pole.
Oh, okay. No, that's definitely not the one.
It's it says there's like a tablet with like a camera on it, and it has like Amazon's Alexa or something built into it too. So it has a digital assistant, and you can do like video calls from it, and it's on wheels for some reason. That doesn't particularly look like. It looks like a lot of things that exist that were just thrown together.
Yeah. Well, I kind of get that with, you know, quote-unquote connected technology in general. I feel like a lot of times they're just kind of taking your smartphone and then putting it into something else that's not as practical. Which, I mean, my smartphone's always in my pocket. Why do I need a smartphone on wheels?
Yeah.
But, hey. That's technology. I guess you've got to iterate on things and figure things out. So then maybe that can lead to something bigger and better eventually. Yeah, there was like a little... I wish I had kept the tab open. There was like a little like emotional support robot.
Oh.
It was a little fuzzy thing on wheels, and it had big eyes and flappy arms.
Yeah, okay.
And
I found it. Yeah,
okay.
It's called a Lovot, L-O-V-O-T. And it's a robot that's designed to be loved and looked after. Mm-hmm. I mean, it kind of looks
like a
child's
Furby.
Toy.
Yeah.
Kind of.
I guess the thing is it rolls around on wheels, and whenever it needs, quote-unquote, needs attention, it flaps its arms, and you pick it up, and it tucks the wheels away, and then it basically becomes like a toy at that point.
It's interesting. A little creepy.
Again, some of these do, they just are a little disturbing looking. There was another one, I don't know if this counts as a robot or not, but... like a sleep aid robot.
Hmm.
Basically a pillow that breathes.
Okay.
So I guess the intent is that you've got this pillow next to you and it's breathing in a regular slow rhythm, and that just gets you to do the same, and then eventually you fall asleep faster. Which, weird, again, a little creepy imagining being in a bed with a non-living thing that's kind of breathing.
Smart sleep robot pillow.
Yeah.
Somnox smart sleep robot pillow. Yeah, that's weird. It looks like a little bean. All right. If they can sell it for $500 and someone will buy it, then good enough.
Yeah.
This thing that I'm looking at now, it's called the Segway Lumo robot, is a delivery robot. And this looks like something that might actually be kind of useful. It has all these drawers on the front of it, and I'm pretty sure, like, you know, you're at an office building and someone brings, you know, a delivery of coffee and drops it off in the robot, and the robot can take it up to the fifth floor and drop it off at someone's desk.
Or maybe do inter-office mail and that sort of thing.
Yeah, like that kind of thing is kind of what it looks like.
Yeah.
It's just, it looks like a giant cabinet with wheels and a touchscreen on it. I could see how that could be useful. So Segway is expanding out of their niche of scooters.
Right.
Those were the robots of CES. So
yeah, and I feel like there's robots every year, but then you never really hear anything about them ever again. I feel like, I might be wrong, but I feel like the only kind of robots that have kind of caught on with a lot of people are like Roombas and Roomba derivatives, you know, things that are either mopping the floor for you automatically or vacuuming for you automatically, or in some cases mowing your lawn for you automatically.
Which it's all pretty much the same technology, right?
Exactly. Yeah, for the most part.
Though a lawn mowing Roomba sounds like it could turn into a murder bot.
Yeah, no, I'm not a big fan of that one.
Yeah.
I especially think, you know, whenever you have to go outside to mow your lawn and deal with the occasional dead animal in your lawn, what is that automated robot going to do? Is it just going to run over and make a bigger mess?
Oh, no.
Like, I don't. Not a fan of that one.
Yeah,
it's too many weird unanswered things for me there.
Too many moving blades on a thing that is automated.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah. I mean, the worst thing that happens with a regular Roomba is if you have a pet and they make a mess on the floor.
Yeah.
The Roomba will make a much bigger mess on the floor.
Track through it.
Yeah.
Yep. Or maybe it'll get stuck in a corner and just chirp helplessly until its battery finally runs out.
Yeah. I kind of want a Roomba though. Well, another new breakthrough technology that was talked a little bit about at CES. It seems to be this year companies are just starting to talk about this. It's not like it wasn't ubiquitous at CES, but it was there, and that's a 5G wireless technology.
Yeah.
So everybody's phone has 4G LTE now for the most part. The wireless networks are in the process or in the stages of planning to upgrade to 5G, and companies are already looking at the products that they're going to be able to use.
Right.
So Samsung had a prototype 5G phone. It was a Samsung Galaxy something or other.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what they're up to now, S9, S10. But it was a Samsung Galaxy phone that was built for a 5G network. And I guess they had it. I mean, who knows if this thing actually worked or not. They said it was behind glass on display, and they had one of them. So it could have just been a regular Samsung phone sitting behind glass on display, and they said it had 5G.
Or just basically a shell of a phone with no internals.
Like, this is a thing we're going to say we're coming out with eventually when the wireless networks actually update.
Mm-hmm.
Another product that was 5G related was a 5G wireless router, which is kind of cool because it allows you to have kind of broadband speed without needing like a cable modem or DSL? I don't know, what else is there? Fiber?
Yeah. I mean, presumably all you would need would be a power supply and a SIM card?
And a data plan?
Data plan, of course. Yeah.
So it would basically be able to get broadband speed in your house wirelessly through a mobile network.
Mm-hmm.
I know that broadband has been an issue with rolling it out in rural areas and things like that because it's so costly to lay all that wire. A lot of communities don't have access to those kind of network speeds.
Mm-hmm.
So being able to do that wirelessly, being able to do it just from a satellite or a cellular network is a huge breakthrough and will be a huge breakthrough if it actually is real and actually works.
If it's real, if it works, and if people are willing to pay for it.
So I know that there has been controversy in the past with wireless networks claiming that they were, I think when 4G started coming around, one of the wireless networks that wasn't actually 4G capable just rebranded their 3G to 4G and had it on their phones.
And I'm pretty sure I just saw a news article the other day about some company already doing that with 5G.
Oh, yeah, here's the article. AT&T will put a fake 5G logo on its 4G LTE phones.
Yep.
AT&T is going to start pretending that its most advanced 4G LTE tech is 5G. So they're lying in their marketing, basically.
Mm-hmm.
They made a little fake 5G logo, and it's basically to trick people into thinking that their network is faster than others.
Exactly.
When it's not.
Well, I mean, there's a history of this, like internet companies, yeah. ISPs have done the same thing too. They'll advertise their internet speed as being one thing, and then you go and do a independent internet speed test and find out that it's a completely different thing altogether. So
you'd think the FCC would
crack down on that.
Yeah, yeah. Like I feel like there should be fines for that kind of thing.
But, I mean, it's false advertising.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But presumably 5G is going to be a real thing, possibly in 2019, possibly in 2020. And the devices will follow. We'll see.
Yeah.
But that is something I'm looking forward to. If they don't do that thing they do every time they upgrade their network and be like, oh, you can upgrade to 5G for $20 extra a month.
Well, they're going to do that.
Thanks, Verizon. All right.
That's just how it goes.
Another technology that has, you know, that was shown at previous CESs and has been, you know, a thing that has been iterating every year for the last 3 or 4 years. We've talked about it before. I think we had a whole podcast on virtual reality at one point.
Mm.
Virtual reality headsets.
I don't think I was part of that podcast. I'll have to go back and listen to it.
It might have been back in the days with Jake, so yeah. It's worth listening to. I think we talked about it right when like Oculus released its first major headset and right when HTC released the Vive.
Yeah. It was a huge deal.
So this year, Oculus is releasing, and Oculus is owned by Facebook. Mm-hmm. Last year, they released a wireless headset called the Oculus Go, which I think was focused mostly on kind of social aspects that you could do. It basically had like a smartphone internals in it.
Sure.
It wasn't super powerful, but they're cheap. I think they're like less than $200 for the standalone headset.
Yeah.
And they're fun. They have inside-out tracking, so when you move around, it looks like you're, you know, moving around in the virtual space, mm-hmm. and you can watch Netflix with people in, like, a movie theater and do social spaces. And that's what the Go was focused on. Well, this year they're releasing a more powerful version called the Oculus Quest, and this is built for more for gaming and the social stuff.
Sure.
And it has controllers that map to your hand movements. I'm not sure the Oculus Go controller actually mapped to your hand movements very well. But this one does have two controllers, and they're pretty much the same controllers, or I think they may be the same controllers that the Oculus Rift uses.
Okay.
And once again, completely standalone. You don't need a computer to use it. It's everything built into it.
And a bunch of chunky wires.
Yeah, you don't need to be connected to the wall or a computer. Or, mm-hmm. And you can use it standing up and, completely wireless. 5 degrees of, or 6 degrees of freedom or something is what they call it, I think, where you can actually move around in a space and
sure.
only have to worry about running into a wall.
Right.
Or tripping over your dog.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I guess we should say that there's, as of right now, two different kinds of VR, right?
Yeah.
There's kind of the room scale VR, which is sort of what Joel's talking about. It's where you can move around in a space. And then there's the, I don't know what the name for it is, the regular VR where you
seated,
just sit still.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, you can look around and it'll track your head movements, but that's kind of it.
Yeah. So the room scale VR does better about tracking your arms and legs and...
And a lot of room scale VR like builds in kind of like protections.
Yeah.
So like, okay, here's a little 4 or 5 foot space you can move around in.
If you get to the edge of the boundary, you'll get like a notice on your screen. Like you can kind of see where the wall is still.
Right. It'll like kind of like have like a little wire mesh sort of thing that says, okay, here's the your boundary space. Don't go past this. You're going to run into your coffee table or whatever. Yeah.
And you can kind of program the boundary space. Mm-hmm. So you can make it work with different size spaces.
Right.
The Oculus Quest, I think it's $400, which is not bad, considering the Oculus Rift, which was the wired version,
mm-hmm.
launched at $650 or something like that.
That sounds about right.
And now it's down to $400, I think, as well. So it's about on par with the price of the Rift for a completely wireless experience. I mean, that opens up a lot of possibilities. I think it's nice seeing the iteration of virtual reality. I think even if it's been a little personally disappointing.
A little underwhelming.
Yeah, a little underwhelming. I haven't gotten to play too much with, like, the bigger virtual reality headsets, like the Oculus Rift or the HTC Vive, or even PlayStation's VR system. But I have played with some ones that use, you know, mobile devices. I think I have a Google Daydream headset, which I got, played with for like a week, and then sat on a shelf and haven't really picked up since then.
Yeah. Yeah, I finally had a chance to play with a VR headset that was the PlayStation one a few weeks back, and it was fun for about 10 minutes. And then I felt kind of done with it. And then I tried a different game on it, and it kind of made me sick, so I stopped. So,
gotcha. Yeah, yeah, I feel like it's nice seeing this technology get a little bit better and the price start to come down a little bit, because they're still pretty expensive. But until it reaches like a critical mass where people are actually using it, I feel like the best thing about VR would be the social possibilities, and until more people are using it, it's hard to take advantage of that.
Yeah, that, or even just the ability to kind of just be in a different space for a while. Like, I really like the idea of, instead of going to a movie theater, you could put on a headset and it just, you feel like you're in a movie theater. If you look to your left and right, you see a movie theater, but then you can watch a movie that way. Stuff like that is intriguing to me, but I feel like that's not necessarily the focus. The focus seems to be more on gaming and stuff like that.
Yeah, and you had a great idea that I thought was really cool earlier. Like being able to like go to a town square in Italy in virtual reality and sit down and pull out an ebook and read a book in this VR space.
Sit on a bench halfway around the world in a place you've never been and may never have a chance to go and read a good book or just listen to some music or something. I think that would be wonderful. I would... Yeah. If someone developed something like that for VR, boy, I would get one of those headsets in a heartbeat.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
That'd be great.
And we've seen some people have developed games where you can play board games in a VR space or card games.
Yeah.
And that seems really cool. But once again, it's one of those social situations where everybody you're playing with would also need to have a VR headset, and getting four friends... to spend $400 on a headset to play a game you could all
go over. Conceivably, just go over to someone's house and play.
Yeah.
I mean, the cool thing about something like that is it does open the door for you to play with someone who's not, like, you know, right next to you.
Yeah.
Who's halfway across the country or even halfway across the world, but it's a bit steep to get into.
The other big VR announcement was the HTC Vive Pro I, which is a HTC Vive Pro, which was announced last year at CES, except this time it has eye tracking, which allows... It seems like maybe a small technology bump, but it actually allows a lot. Basically, it'll know where you're looking, and you can interact with the surroundings just by looking at something.
Mm-hmm.
So if your eye focuses on something in the background, it could trigger a dialogue, or it could trigger... you could, like, use your eyes almost as a controller as well. So, like, if you're playing a card game, you can, like, look with your eyes and select a card.
Well, and you think about the possibilities for people that don't have use of their arms or their hands, too.
Yeah. But I think the big use for it is a thing called foveated rendering. So virtual reality rendering basically HD in two screens to have it really good. This is why using a computer with virtual reality is right now much better than using a mobile device.
Yep.
It can process much higher definition images twice, and that's why video games just work so much better on computer VR rather than portable VR. So this allows you to basically, what you're looking at is the, like, what you're looking at directly, since it knows where your eyes are, is the only thing it fully processes in HD, and then it processes the rest of the stuff in more background. I mean, and as you look around, it follows it. Basically allows you to process HD scenes with nowhere near as much computer processing power, because it's only doing a fraction of what right now standard VR is doing, where you need to be able to process the entire scene, not just the thing you're looking at.
Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what video games have done for years already. That's why you can have such exquisite, super detailed worlds in video games, because it's only ever going to actually be processing or worrying about what you're directly looking at any given time for the most part.
Yeah, if you're playing Tomb Raider or something,
yeah,
the only thing that's being rendered is what's directly in front of your character.
Yep.
If you turn around, it renders a new scene. It's not like the entire virtual world is mm-hmm. being rendered. So this allows that to happen in virtual reality, allows you to basically really amp up the frame rate, amp up a lot of the things.
And I think
that
it might
it
help
better.
Like with the people that experience motion sickness with it too a little bit. I'm not sure, but I feel like when I was playing with it, the reason why I was getting sick was because it was just my eyes couldn't focus on any one thing.
Yeah.
Whereas if it's actually kind of bringing into sharper clarity what your eyes are looking at and then sort of pushing away the rest just slightly, I don't know, I feel like that might help. I'd have to actually try it out in person to see.
Yeah. It's definitely, I mean, a little technology change that can make a big difference and is probably a big jump forward for making virtual reality a little bit more that people will actually be able to use it, have computers that can run it.
Right.
Or, you know, for these standalone devices that are coming out, if this technology gets implemented in them in the future, you could have much better games you could play mm-hmm. on the devices without needing to be tethered to your computer.
Of course, I imagine this new HTC is also going to be quite expensive, if I had to guess.
It's $700, yeah, I think. Yeah. Which the HTC Vive has not gone down in much in price. The original one, I think the original one's $500, and then the Pro is $600, and this one will be $700.
Yep.
Yeah. So that's the new virtual reality stuff that was presented at CES.
Mm-hmm.
So we briefly talked about some health devices that were at CES. I think when we were talking about robots, but one thing we didn't mention was this Samsung exoskeleton mobility assist device that was presented at CES.
Really cool.
Yeah, basically it's a device you can strap onto your legs or hips.
Both.
They had a couple different versions. And it kind of looks like, I don't know, like...
like sci-fi stuff.
Yeah, it's very sci-fi. It reminds me of, you know, not quite the loader in Aliens.
Right.
Because that's much bigger.
Yeah, or the movie by the guy who did District 9.
Oh, I know what you're talking about. What is it? The one with...
Matt Damon.
Matt Damon.
Yeah. He wore an exoskeleton in that.
Elysium. That's
Elysium,
the one.
There we go. Okay.
So something like that, but they only had it strapped onto legs, and this was mainly a health device that Samsung was coming out with. I don't think it actually makes you like super strong or anything.
No.
Or allows you to run or allows you to
no, nothing like that,
but I think that one of the capabilities of it was for a physical therapy device, so if you have like a leg or spinal injury but you're not fully paralyzed, mm-hmm. you can use it to kind of help you regain your strength. Like,
right.
You can set in, like, it can help you a little bit, but also once you start getting some of your strength back, you can dial it in so it has more resistance. So as you're walking, you're actually building your muscles back up.
Yeah.
And that seems like a really cool use of that technology.
Yeah. And I think even beyond that, like beyond just the physical therapy thing, it also kind of helps people, they just have slight mobility problems in the first place, so like it might help with balance going up and down stairs and that sort of thing as well.
Yeah,
really interesting.
So there was a write-up in Gizmodo that someone got to try it on and wear it, and they're saying that the device was subtly lifting the legs with every step when they were going up the steps, so it made them feel just so much lighter.
Yeah.
So I can imagine if you're older, it can help you get around a lot more without the need for like a cane, and it can help you balance so you don't fall over.
Right.
Yeah. So I don't know what kind of batteries this thing takes, how often you need to charge it.
Batteries or price.
Yeah. Any of that stuff.
Yeah.
But it did look like a cool device that could help people in the future. One of the other cool new technologies that is starting to become a thing is wireless charging. And I'm not talking about, you know, those little pads that you can set your phone on and your phone will charge while it's sitting on the pad.
Right.
We're talking about over-the-air wireless charging. Mm-hmm. So something that Nikola Tesla tried to do 100 years ago.
Yes. Sounds about right.
Yeah. Now, right now, they have, basically, you need like a base device. Mm-hmm. And still at this point, you have to be, I think, within 2 feet of it.
Yeah.
For your device to actually get a power source and charge. But they had some interesting uses for it. I think I saw one that was something that you could put on your phone and it would charge your like mobile device. So if you have like basically using your phone as the battery and it would send out a signal to your wearable. So if you have like an Apple Watch or an iWatch or whatever they're called, you could charge your watch wirelessly from your phone while you were out and about, or from the battery while you were out and about. And I saw they had one that was designed for Nintendo Switch controllers, that like a charging grip. You could put it into the grip and just set it down near the base, and it'll charge the controllers without having to take them off and put them into the Nintendo.
Which is such a cool thing, because we've always wanted this, right? Like, we've always wanted this to be the end game for charging devices, not having to plug it into anything, not having to set it on anything, just put it down somewhere and have it charge.
Yeah. That would be great. And it'd be great to be able to charge something just while you're on the go without needing wires. So I think that it's a cool first step.
Mm-hmm.
2 feet's not very far.
No. You might as well be setting it on something.
Yeah, you might as well be plugging it in or setting it on a mat. But
yeah,
I think that if they can get that technology to work a little bit more, imagine having just a wireless electrical field in your house. You may not need to plug things in at all anymore. You could have a lamp that is just wireless.
It just kind of blows my mind. I wonder, what I wonder about is like, if this is good for people.
Well, like, it's like the Wi-Fi thing where people, know, think that Wi-Fi signals or
or you can be cell allergic signals, to them and stuff.
Mess with your body, which who knows, maybe they do, but yeah, I do think it's cool. I know that that is something that Nikola Tesla had worked on like 100 years ago.
Yeah.
Powering light bulbs just through an electrical field that is not just a wireless electrical field.
Yeah.
So something that we may be figuring out, maybe. So another interesting thing that both Colin and I thought was really cool. This is not an electronic at all.
It's not.
It's a burger.
Yeah, well,
actually,
kind of.
It's a veggie burger.
Yeah.
It's the Impossible Burger 2.0.
Which I've never had the Impossible Burger 1.0. But
either have I. But apparently this actually won over a lot of people at the conference. There was a lot of really positive reviews about the taste of this veggie burger.
Not just the taste, but
taste
the texture.
And texture. Yeah. So someone may have finally cracked the veggie burger by making a good beef substitute.
Mm-hmm.
That tastes and feels actually like real beef.
Like beef.
And the images of it made it look, it looked like a real burger.
It looks a little weird, but it still looks closer to a real burger than any other kind of veggie burger I've seen.
Yeah. So if they actually start releasing these, I might have to try it.
Yeah.
Don't know if I'd be an immediate convert, but I would try it.
Well, that's the thing with this. I think for anyone to be a convert, it would have to be flexible, just like real ground beef is. So not only will it be good in burgers, but also like chilies and casseroles and tacos and all that kind of stuff.
Meatloaf. Veggie burger loaf.
Right. But then price is also a thing. So I think that's why so many people do just go out and buy
ground beef burger. Is cheap.
It's super cheap. You can go buy several pounds of it, put it in the freezer and be good for like, you know, a month or two, depending on how often you make something with it. Whereas, of course, if this winds up being really expensive, even if it's in grocery stores, I don't know if people are going to be flocking to it.
Yeah. But now, that is true. But I know that beef production is just one of those things that's really so environmentally unfriendly.
Yes.
And red meat is apparently really bad for you. I don't know anything about that. But
there was some report that just came out a couple days ago, maybe even earlier today, where it was talking about how they recommended that for like future sustainability, that Americans cuts their red meat food consumption down by like 86%. Which, boy, that's a big ask.
So maybe if this Impossible Burger 2.0 actually tastes like a burger, or close enough,
right,
and is cheap enough,
it'd help out a little bit.
Yeah, maybe I would be converted. I would
sure
make cheeseburgers more of a luxury and
right, exactly. Yeah. That'd be the way to do it.
Which I had one for dinner last night, so I don't know.
It's a hard thing to give up.
Yeah.
but it also, of course, opens up the doors for vegetarians and vegans as well, which is great.
Yeah, that's true. One of the last really cool things before we talk briefly about some of the bad and weird stuff that was
my favorite part
at CES this year. Harley Davidson spotlighted their new electric motorcycle, which is coming out in August and is actually a real product.
Yeah, and that blows my mind because Joel told me about this and I just assumed it was going to be like a prototype. But the fact that it's already like in production and will be coming out and you can pre-order it right now if you want to. Yeah.
It's an all-electric Harley. It's called the Livewire, zero emissions vehicle. It has 0 to 60 in 3.5 seconds and a range of 110 miles in city conditions, which is pretty good for a motorcycle.
Yeah, I'd say so.
Yeah.
And it's expensive, $30,000.
It's like $29,800.
Frankly, that's a lot cheaper than I guess I was expecting it to be for some reason.
Well, I mean, how much is a regular Harley Davidson? Like,
I don't know. I'm not a motorcycle guy. I should ask my brother. But
I don't know. Price sounds. I was going to say like $15,000 to $20,000.
I mean, that sounds ballpark right-ish.
Ridiculous to me, but yeah. I don't know how much they cost. So. Yeah. So the fact that the all-electric Harley Davidson might not be that much more than or about the same cost as a regular Harley Davidson, depending on the model. it's pretty cool. And the thing looks really cool. I mean, I'm not a motorcycle guy.
No, me neither.
I've thought about it before, but I think it would be a little scary city driving. But
yeah, I mean, I think about how many times I got into accidents on just my regular like pedal bike when I was a kid.
Yeah. I don't trust other drivers, let alone
that's the other thing,
strapped to a device that can go 100 miles an hour with no real like protection on me.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. But it's also, it's quiet, so that's a nice thing too. Harley Davidsons are generally very loud bikes, like very loud. So having it be, quiet.
Well, I'm just all for electric vehicles.
Great. Me too.
And I can't wait for prices to continue to go down on them so that more and more people can get them.
Yeah. So it looks very sporty. It's,
Yeah, it looks like a cool Harley Davidson, at least in my eyes.
Yeah. So that's the Livewire. Before we go, we were going to talk about a couple of the weird, bad things that were at CES.
Yes. Because there's weird bad things every year.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They're ridiculous gadgets that people try to sell or try to get
ridiculous or just, in some cases, just really dumb.
Or just kind of baffling. Like, okay, does this actually do anything? So one of the trends is always adding smart, the suffix or prefix smart to something random. All right. And this is something we've noticed forever. I mean, there's all the smart kitchen gadgets now, smart microwaves and smart refrigerators.
Mm-hmm.
But we found some things dumber than those.
Yes.
So the smart toilet is one. I have to look up the actual brand real quick.
It's Kohler.
Oh my gosh, there's multiples. There was more than one.
There was more than one smart toilet?
At CES 2019, there was the Toto Neorist NX2. The Kohler Numi 2.0 intelligent toilet. I think that's the one you were talking about.
Yeah, that was the only one that I was aware of.
That's the one. Okay. So let's talk about the Kohler one.
It looks like
a little box. It's not even like super toilet shaped. It looks like a box on the floor, but it has like slanted sides.
Yeah,
so it's not
they're
like
trying to
super
make it
boxy.
Look like minimalistic and kind of
So it has Alexa built into the toilet. So,
so you can Amazon's order more voice toilet paper, assistant.
Yeah. Yeah. Probably change the lights of the toilet while you're...
Yeah, it's got the mood lighting built into the toilet.
Yeah. Has a seat heater and...
And the toilet seat opens as you approach and closes as you leave.
And it has a heated bidet.
Built-in speakers.
Built-in speakers. I wonder if it talks to you.
Oh, I hope not.
That would be so awkward.
you can tell it to flush itself, so you don't even have to pull the lever or push the button or whatever.
I'm just picturing the Alexa, flush the toilet. I'm like, oh gosh, yeah.
And you can tell it to change the temperature of the seat.
Yeah.
You can tell it to play a different music track, because that's what I want to do when I go to the bathroom, is talk to my toilet and tell it to play different music for me. It is crazy.
$7,000.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Baffling. Let us know if you think this is a great idea.
Yeah. And
I'd like to hear another point of view.
The other similar, I mean, not super similar, but, you know, smart litter box. There was a smart litter box for your cat.
Yeah.
It's called the LaviBot. It's a automated cat litter box that, cleans itself and refills itself. Like, all you have to do is basically put litter in it every once, like in the trap or whatever, every once in a while.
And then every 2 to 3 weeks, like
empty the drawer. Yeah, so it'll clean itself. It also has an app that will let you know when the cat has gone to the bathroom.
Yep. So you can be alerted.
You can be alerted when your cat uses the restroom.
To be fair, like if you've got like a sick or an elderly cat,
not a bad thing. Yeah.
And also, to be fair, this sounds way more appealing to me than a smart toilet that I would use, because who likes changing cat litter?
Yeah, it at least fixes, having to do it once every 3 weeks.
I just wonder about the expense.
Yeah, it's
especially if you have like more than one cat.
It's launching on Indiegogo, so it's basically one of those products that they're looking for investors still. And it's going to be on May 2019 is when the Indiegogo was supposed to start. So Indiegogo is a website similar to
Kickstarter.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So those are some of the interesting smart gadgets that, and then also Samsung's refrigerator with a huge screen on the front that you can hit a button and look inside the fridge on. Like that's more difficult than opening the door.
There was some fridge that you stock only with a beer, and it tracks how much beer you have left. And when you start running low, it places an order for more beer for you.
Okay.
I saw that as well. Also seems a little ridiculous.
I could see the use in that. No.
I mean, sure. Part of me likes that idea again, kind of like the whole smart cat litter thing. But it's also such a... This is what our best and brightest are working on designing for us.
Or I saw one of the smart refrigerators will send you a notification if the door is open. It's like, it'll send you a text or send you a notification to your phone if someone left the door open. But like, wouldn't it just be easier if it closed the door itself? Like if it had a motor in it or something.
Or like my parents' new fridge, it just beeps annoyingly if someone leaves the door open for too long. So then you know that, oh, the door's open. Let's go shut it.
Yeah. I don't know. Sometimes what they decide to put smart technology into or Internet of Things technology into is a little much for me.
Yeah. No, yeah. For sure. I don't know. I feel like, at least me personally, the more we live in this everything is connected age, the more I want things that aren't connected. So, like, I've already got, like, a cell phone and a computer and laptops and stuff at home. If I want an alarm clock, I don't know if I want an alarm clock that's going to be connected. I just want, like, a regular old alarm clock. Maybe that's just me. I don't know.
Another thing that actually was pretty popular at CES and got some awards was this heated razor from Gillette Labs. Okay, maybe I'm not the target audience. Colin and I are not the target audience for this. I don't think either of us have shaven in...
I still have to shave little bits occasionally. Yeah. But, I mean, I've always had problems with, like, Gillette and other companies like that sell you crappy little plastic handles and these super expensive... razor cartridges.
And you gotta keep buying the new blades.
Yeah. And the way they innovate is by adding more blades to these cartridges, which great, that's going to make my skin feel better.
Yeah.
Or making them like vibrate, because I'm sure that helps while shaving. And now heated, like if you want a heated blade, when you're shaving, you just swing your blade underneath some hot water and there you go. I mean, that's what everybody
does. The thing, it was actually sold out on Indiegogo as well. And
it makes me angry.
The tagline is, experience the comfort of a hot towel with every stroke. So, all right. Heated razor from Gillette Labs.
No.
Or just be like me and avoid shaving for a long time.
Yeah, avoid shaving. I mean, if you have to do touch-up, I still just use a good old safety razor.
Yeah.
Buy a safety razor handle, buy 100 blades for $10. Don't worry about buying those stupid expensive cartridges anymore. You're set.
I have an electric razor.
Electric razor. Same thing.
Cleaning up my neck, and I go to the barber every once in a while, and he fixes my beard for me.
I should probably do that. It's probably getting to that point.
And last but not least, there was a foldable screen. I think it was a phone. That
I almost
was,
forgot about this.
Yeah. It looked like a floppy phone. It looked like an iPad that was floppy or something. You could fold the screen over in half, but it wasn't solid. Like, it was like, I feel like if I picked it up by the corner, the whole thing would just be like...
Yeah, and it seemed like if you folded it in half, it didn't even really save any space. Like, the hinge on it was still pretty bulky, so if anything, it just made it bulkier folded in half, which I don't think is what people want from a folding phone.
Yeah, it's like rolling up a newspaper and trying to shove it into your pocket.
Yeah, and, I mean... When we say folding phone, we mean like it looks like a smartphone or a tablet where most of it's screen. They hadn't figured out a way so that when you're touching the screen as you're folding it, you're not like activating all these other apps or opening things or closing things or moving things around. So it just kind of seems like a complete nightmare to use. And some of the reviewers were saying that, you know, the more you use it, of course, it begins to get like these wrinkles. If you put it like flat on the surface, it never actually lies completely flat because it's just kind of a wobbly thing.
Yeah.
And it's for sale for I think well over $1,000.
Oh, I didn't realize this was being made by Samsung too.
Well, this one is not. Samsung has another one that they're...
Samsung has the Galaxy S that they're...
Yeah.
X that they're...
They're working on making a folding phone. Hopefully it is better and more thought out than this one. I don't remember the maker of this particular phone. It was a Chinese company.
Okay. Yeah, this one here looks more like what... I don't know. It's strange.
I kind of wonder about the utility of a folding phone in the first place, because I feel like we've kind of gotten to the point where unless you're purposely getting a really large, oversized phone, most smartphones are small enough to fit in your pocket easily without adding a lot of extra bulk.
Or big enough that you can do whatever you need to on the screen.
Exactly. I think that's the thing, is they want to have like something that has a small form factor, but then you can unfold it and have more screen space.
Yeah.
I don't know how I feel about that. I don't know if I feel like that's necessary. Isn't that what a tablet's for?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, folding phones, those are coming.
Apparently they are, yeah.
Quite as floppy as I had talked about, but I just watched the video and it was working. The hinge was working. It wasn't like flopping all over the place, but it also did look really bulky.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm sure when Samsung presents their prototype or their in production model next year or whatever it is, it'll probably be a little more refined than this one. But yeah, still not impressed.
So that's the Consumer Electronics Show of 2019.
Yeah.
Man, like I said, a lot of things we've seen before, just new versions, a lot of nice new iterations, some good leaps forward on some things, and a nice veggie burger that I want to try.
Yeah, honestly, I feel a little weird by saying it, but I think the thing I'm kind of the most interested in or excited about is the veggie burger, which is not something I thought I'd ever say in my life. Much less about CES. So,
well, I guess we'll see what of these things actually come out, what actually works, and
what sticks around and what makes an impact.
What they're going to do next year to iterate these devices. I mean, can you even think of
Oh, we'll see all sorts.
We'll have a 440-inch TV next year.
Yeah, we'll see like smart baseball caps.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like that. There'll probably be a smart toilet paper roll. Probably. And that's like the next step in the bathroom, right?
Yeah. Smart sink.
Yeah. Yeah.
Smart shower, smart tub. They can go all sorts of places.
Yep. All right. Well, thank you. I think that's about all the time we have.
Oh, yeah. For sure.